You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, February 14th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Afghan papers released, Republicans attempt to curtail not just birth control, Occupy Wall Street, there's a couple of victories of note, anonymous, still bringing down websites. And that piece on the safety net, so-called safety net critics in the New York Times. No guest today. For those of you just joining us for the first time, we generally have an extended interview, but today we don't. Today there's some stories I want to talk about, and that's what I'll do. We'll also break format, and if you're interested in calling the program during the lesser half of the show, for those of you who, again, who are just joining us for the first time today, we take your phone calls generally in the better half of the program. We also take your IMs in the better half of the program, which generally starts at about 12:10 Eastern. 40 minutes into the program, we give you 40 minutes of, well, it's not really free programming. It's subsidized by our members. In other words, it's like a transfer, as if our members pay taxes and the rest of you live in red states and just get just live off the largesse of those members. If you can become a member, you can do so at majority.fm. It is a mere 33 cents a day to support this program, continue its ongoing coverage of the news of the day and analysis and of just my general woes that sometimes infiltrate the, Happy Valentine's Day. Today, it's also my wife's birthday, so I can get in trouble twice today. And of course, now it's my daughter thinks it's another excuse for her to get presents.
It's also His Highness Mayor Bloomberg's birthday today.
I had no idea. I had no idea, but that makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it, folks? So I want to, first off, interesting piece of news, since we're talking about my wife's birthday. Justice Breyer robbed at his home in Nevis. 73-year-old Breyer, his wife, Joanna, and guests were confronted by a robber at 9 p.m. Nevis time. I guess that's Eastern time. He owns a home on the island of Nevis. because it's apparently worth up between $100,000 and $250,000. That's not terribly expensive. It's expensive to get down there. But I went on my honeymoon to the Isle of Nevis and had the largest outbreak of eczema I've ever had in my life and had no idea what it was. But I spent literally 24 hours just standing because my arms, I had no idea what it was. And so my arms just got worse and worse. Like they raging eczema. It's like sun poisoning. And I didn't know what it was. And so what I did was the opposite of what you're supposed to do when you have eczema. I had never really gotten an attack like that. I don't know if it was a function of just the first blast of sun in the middle of the winter or the fact that I was then married and adjusting to married life. But it was incredibly painful. And instead of going out in the sun and letting the sun dry it up, I kept putting on sunblock, which is the worst thing you can do for eczema. So it brought a smile to my face when I saw that there was fortunately nobody was hurt. And they have monkeys, like tiny monkeys on the island of Nevis that you can go and see. All right, this story I have been following, a really fascinating conversation. It's about libertarians and birth control. And, this has been going on because, of course, Rick Santorum, well, this is in the news because the Obama administration announced, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, that as part of the Affordable Care Act, health insurance companies were now, forced to provide birth control as one of the drugs that they cover, contraception. And this created a big outcry from religious organizations because although they are exempted from churches, if you employ people at your church or your temple or your strictly religious institution, you are exempt. If you are a religious organization and operate another type of institution, a hospital, a school, then you are obligated to, your insurance company is obligated to provide this. And the bishops didn't like this because it's against their conscience. And so the Obama administration forged a compromise wherein they would not have to pay for it. Insurance companies would simply have to provide it for free, and eat those costs, which in the end probably saves the insurance company's money anyways because of all the health-related costs that they would avoid because there are millions of women who take birth control to deal with other health-related issues that have nothing to do, in fact, with birth control. They take contraceptive pills because it also has other effects that are helpful for certain problems. Now, the Republicans were not satisfied with that, nor were the bishops, to my understanding. And they are now saying that all businesses, Republicans, are pushing a bill that would allow all employers and insurance companies to pick and choose what they're going to offer in terms of prescription care, based upon their moral convictions. So, if you, let's say, don't like fat people, and they need some drugs to deal with obesity problems, or then you could just simply deny them based on that. If you don't think that anybody should be taking any type of medicine, you could deny them prescription care. If you don't like screening for certain cancers because you just morally just don't think that people should be screened for stuff, you know, deal with it is your moral conviction. That would be it. And so this has created an interesting conversation online that was on this weekend, Virtually Speaking, which I've been on the past. It's Jay Aykroyd It was a show that came out of Second Life, which is a sort of a, I don't know, an online virtual world. But it's essentially a podcast and a political talk show. And Digby picked up on this. And in the context of talking about libertarians and Ron Paul, there's been some question as to how is it that libertarians can reconcile their issues, their notion that government should not be involved at all in people's personal lives. Yet someone like Ron Paul believes that a woman should not have autonomy over her own body in decisions of abortion or other reproductive choices that one might make. And Digby, I guess, had this conversation with Corey Robin, who was on this program, who was talking about the conservative ideology. We had him on this program to talk about his book. And the idea that the conservative ideology, of course, puts private property and a system where property rights trumps all. And so Mike Konzikal at Rorty Bomb was looked into Ludwig von Mises' writing to find the basis in which, in many respects, and we have talked about this, how this works with civil liberties and whatnot, the implications of having property rights uber alles, if you will, as an organizing principle in society. We know, Rand Paul has said explicitly, and we know implicitly, many libertarians won't talk about this because they consider it settled law. Now, of course, abortion rights are not settled law in the mind of a libertarian because they want to still re-litigate that. However, the Civil Rights Act is settled law, so they try and avoid this question. But word up to a libertarian, if you owned a restaurant, it would be perfectly within your purview, though you serve white people, to deny, let's say, black people a seat at the counter. And then, of course, the market would take care of this, theoretically. People would just not go to your restaurant because they didn't like the fact that you didn't like black people and wouldn't serve them in the restaurant. And the marketplace would sort it all out. Ultimately, when you dig down into a libertarian philosophy, it essentially says those with money and power have a higher standing in society by virtue of the fact that they have money and power. And as we had, Andrew Schiff, Peter Schiff's brother, call in and say, look, that's just the way society works. If you don't have access to certain things, you don't have access to it. If you have a low paying job, you probably deserve it. And that's the way society will organize. And if you can't afford healthcare, you can't afford healthcare. You know, that's just the way the ball bounces. If you die on the streets, you die on the streets. So Mike Konzikal at Rorty Bomb, on the suggestion of Corey Robin, dug into Ludwig von Mises. And specifically his 1922 book, Socialism. To look at this topic of free love and how it's so problematic. Now, what does free love mean? Free love means having sex without the cost of getting pregnant for a woman. For men, it's always free love. You understand that, right? Men have always have free love, but women need essentially contraception to not have free love. Or I should say, to have free love. And Mises writes, this again from Rorty Bomb, proposals to transform the relations between the sexes have long gone hand in hand with plans for the socialization of the means of production. Marriage is to disappear along with private property. Free love also means that you can have sex without being married. Socialism promises not only wealth for all, but universal happiness in love as well. By making the wife, Consicle says, by making the wife an equal of the husband, it is only a matter of time until the worker seeks to be the equal of the boss. And sex itself freely shared among consenting equals, how can we even maintain the idea of private property? You understand what Mises is saying here. So far as, and this is a quote, so far as feminism seeks to adjust the legal position of women, of a woman, to that of man, so far as it seeks to offer her legal and economic freedom to develop and act in accordance with her inclinations, desires, and economic circumstances, so far it is nothing more than a branch of the great liberal movement which advocates peaceful and free evolution. When going beyond this, it attacks the institutions of social life under the impression that it will thus be able to remove the natural barriers. What are the natural barriers? That when man and woman fornicate, the woman gets pregnant. Mises sees this as a natural barrier that women just have to becoming economic equals with men. Because once you rid this natural barrier of them having to get pregnant and having to care for the baby, then what they can do is go out and earn money like a man. This is unnatural. So in the same way that free markets exist in nature, so too does a woman's, my word, handicap in the marketplace. And that handicap, of course, is that they could get pregnant and have a baby. Now, in nature, this is not a handicap for society. It's simply a handicap that a woman has in the context of the market. And he says, this is a spiritual child of socialism, for it is a characteristic of socialism to discover in social institutions the origin of unalterable facts of nature. This being that a woman's role is to squeeze out babies and care for them. And to endeavor, he writes, by reforming these institutions, to reform nature. The socialistic society abolishes the economic dependence of woman, which results from the fact that woman is dependent on the income of her husband, writes Mises. Man and woman have the same economic rights and the same duties as far as motherhood does not demand special consideration for the woman. You see that? Public funds provide for the maintenance and education of the children, which are no longer the affair of the parents, but of society. Thus, the relationship between the sexes are no longer influenced by social and economic conditions. This is problematic because, according to Mises, it is attempting to alter the unalterable facts of nature. He writes, just as the pseudo-democratic movement endeavors by decrees to efface natural and socially conditioned inequalities. These are just, that's just it, ladies. These are natural and socially conditioned inequalities. Live with it. Just as it wants to make the strong equal to the weak, the talented to the untalented. You see that? It's just, if you're untalented, you lose. And that's just the way it is. If you're weak, you lose. That's just the way it is. If you're a woman, you got to have babies and you got to take care of the kids. And that's just the way it is. These things cannot and should not be altered. So the radical wing of the women's movement seeks to make women the equal of men. But the difference between sexual character and sexual destiny can no more be decreed away than other inequalities of mankind. Deal with it, ladies. Deal with it, ladies. And so the debate goes on in this post by Rorty Bomb in the comment section. One commenter writes, well, no, Mises didn't have a problem with this. Because he wrote, with the spread and progress of capitalism, birth control becomes a universal practice. However, which implies, of course, that Mises accepts birth control as a legitimate device, I guess, that can be employed by women. But Robin, Corey Robin, jumps into the comment sections and responds with another quote from Mises. Which says, in the market economy, every individual is spontaneously intent upon not begetting children whom he could not rear without considerably lowering his family standard of life. In other words, birth control is legitimate if the man decides we can't afford any more kids. But if the woman uses birth control as a means in which to alter the facts of nature and allow her to be competitive in the market, that's problematic. Because it's just what nature decreed. Robin goes on in the comments to quote Mises again. Her destiny, this is speaking of the woman, is completely circumscribed by sex. Woman must exhaust herself as lover and as mother in the service of the sexual instinct. Now look, I happen to agree with that part. That doesn't go over so well at home. But, and the stack of Mises books that I've left on Nikki's bedside table just seem to just go untouched. It is not marriage which keeps woman inwardly unfree, but the fact that her sexual character demands surrender to a man. Because if, were she to renounce this, it would entail a woman, quote, renouncing either the most profound womanly joy, the joy of motherhood, for the sake of the more masculine development of her personality. Which, of course, would be to go and work and compete with man in the marketplace. So, thus you see how the libertarian philosophy essentially can bring itself to saying that there are certain unalterable things. You know, at the end of the day, we know what the libertarian philosophy is. It is simply a way in which to protect those who already have power and our 40-minute interview with Corey Robin really lays this out, that the conservative philosophy, the conservative ideology is one in which always seeks to maintain the status quo and merely reacts against any type of emancipation movement that crops up. And make no mistake about it, birth control, contraceptive, particularly ones that can be taken and controlled by women, has had a huge emancipatory effect on women. But to a libertarian, this is altering that which nature has decreed. And in other words, God knew what he was doing when he said, when God, I think, I'm not sure which commandment this is. Something about like a woman supposed to be barefoot and naked in the kitchen. Or and pregnant. And I don't know if that's the actual translation from the Sanskrit. I think in the Sanskrit it was by the hearth. Because I don't think they had kitchens at the time. It was just like, you got to be near the fire to be cooking that stuff. So a really fascinating sort of sidelight to this whole debate that we're seeing in Congress now. I mean, I don't know if it's really a debate. I mean, this is just what the Republicans are pushing. And frankly, much to the detriment of their chances in the fall. I really do think that we should just keep an eye out to see at what point we're going to see the big Republican money start to focus on the House and Senate races. That's really the question. Mitt Romney is now supposedly trailing Santorum in the polls in his native state of Michigan, where the Romney name quite prominent. His father, perhaps one of the most famous governors from Michigan. And Romney, incidentally, won this primary in 2008, beating McCain. And you'll recall, at that time, McCain went on to be the nominee. So it's just a fascinating turn of events. And other quick notes I want to tell you. We have a link on the blog to act.350.org. The Republicans are also trying to resurrect the Keystone XL pipeline, which was rejected by the Obama administration because the Republicans forced the Obama administration to make a decision within a 60-day period in which it was impossible to do the studies that were needed to see if they could get Keystone Pipeline up. So the Republicans are trying to amend this to a transportation bill. There have been over, my understanding, 500,000 signatures in less than 24 hours, and now they're aiming for 1 million. Right now it's 600,000 plus. So you can find that link at majority.fm. Also in the news, I think it was yesterday, Christine Gregoire signed the marriage equality bill in Washington State. My belief is there's a 90-day period before that will be enacted.
I think it's June 7th.
And Rick Santorum was there. I guess he got glitter bombed. Of course, that's exactly what he wanted to do because he is the culture warrior in the Republican Party. Every time he wages this war, he ticks up a little bit in the Republican polls. The New Jersey State Senate also approved a same-sex marriage bill on Monday. We believe that, Chris Christie is going to, veto this, right?
I think it's a guarantee he's going to, because he wants the people of New Jersey to vote for it.
The buck stops, well, not so much with Christie.
I'm pretty sure that's how Chris Christie also plans his diet. He lets the people of New Jersey vote.
Okay,
on it.
Come on now. That's not nice. That's not nice. You want someone else to quit the show now? That's not nice.
I only make fun of a-holes.
There's another piece here that I wanted to address yesterday. And it's a fascinating story in the New York Times about the dynamic between those people who tend to receive the most. Well, I should say on the lower half of the income scale, because we know that most of the government largesse actually redoubts to the wealthiest in this country in the form of tax credits and loopholes and lowered tax rates and what we know as tax expenditures. But there's a story in the Times yesterday. It's anecdotal, but there's a decent amount of data support for this. This is in Minnesota. Kai Gulbranson owns a local apparel shop, deals in jewelry on the side, and referees youth soccer games. He makes $39,000 a year and wants to know that he does not need any help from the federal government. He says that too many Americans lean on taxpayers rather than living within their means. 2010, he printed T-shirts for the Tea Party campaign of a neighbor, Chip Kravarak, who ousted this region's long-serving Democratic congressman. Yet, this year, as in each of the past 3 years, Mr. Gulbranson, 57, is counting on a payment of several thousand dollars from the federal government, subsidy for working families called the Earned Income Tax Credit. He has signed up his three school-aged children to eat free breakfast and lunch at federal expense, and Medicare paid for his mother to have hip surgery twice. Dozens of benefits programs provided an average of $6,583 for each man, woman, and child in the country in 2009, a 69% increase from 2000 after adjusting for inflation. As more middle-class families like the Gulbransons land in the safety net in similar communities, anger at government has increased alongside. Many people say they are angry because the government is wasting money and giving money to people who do not deserve it. But more than that, they say they want to reduce the role of government in their own lives. They are frustrated that they need help, feel guilty for taking it, and resent the government for providing it. They say they want less help for themselves, less help in caring for relatives, less assistance when they reach old age. Now, first of all, a couple of facts here that the New York Times gets wrong. We have not seen an expansion of government safety net programs. In other words, these programs are not larger in terms of who they cover, or I should say, when they kick in terms of income. We have not seen a creation of new programs. The last one was under the Bush administration, Medicare Part D, which expanded prescription drug coverage. And in the future, we will see an expansion of Medicare under the Affordable Care Act. But aside from that, we have not seen an expansion of these programs. We have seen more people drop in income and have crossed the threshold of when they become eligible. That doesn't mean the eligibility has expanded. That means that during a recession, more people fall into the category that need help. So, in fact, we are spending more money on food stamps, but that is not because the standard or the requirement for eligibility for food stamps has changed. It means that more people's income has dropped, making them eligible. That's a significant difference from an expansion of a program. Yes, it costs more money because more people need help. The definition of more people needing help has not changed. Mr. Gulbranson said the money covered the fees for his children's sports leagues and the cost of keeping older one on the family car insurance. This is the earned tax income credit and his free lunch and breakfast. If we didn't get these government things, then probably my kids could not participate in some of the sports they do. So there is no expansion of the safety net, as the piece suggests. Another story, Barbara Sullivan moved into apartments above the Chicago Chisago County Senior Center in North Branch. Waiting on a recent Friday for a hot lunch, which cost $3.50, she watched roughly 20 people play bingo for prizes, including canned soup and Chef Boyardee pasta. She said most of the seniors around here are struggling to make it. She counts herself among them. She lives on $1,200 a month in Social Security benefits, relied on Medicare to pay for an operation in November. She believes that she's taking more from the government than she paid in taxes. She worried about the consequences for her grandchildren. She said she would like politicians to propose solutions. Well, I would argue that the politicians did propose solutions when they proposed Medicare and Social Security, which is keeping this woman out of abject poverty. We're reasonable people, she said. We're not going to say, give it to me and let my grandchildren suffer. I think they underestimate seniors when they think that way. Well, the fact of the matter is, Social Security will also keep her grandchildren out of abject poverty. It is a social insurance program, which basically is a hedge against being abjectly poor when you are a senior. The problem is not that the Medicare program is growing in expense. The problem is that health care is growing in expense. Private insurance, which is the apples to apples comparison with Medicare, is growing at a far greater rate of expense, because as the cost of medical care grows, so too does the profits and the administration of that health insurance in the private industry. In Medicare, the administration of that program does not change. But she also says she cannot imagine asking people to pay higher taxes. As she considered making do with less, she started to cry. Without it, I'm not sure how I would live. Well, you know what she should also not be sure of? How her grandchildren might live if they don't have this same program. With the check I'm getting from Social Security, it's a constant struggle on making sure that I pay my rent and have enough left for groceries. This is funny. The guy, Kravarak, who beat Oberstar in Minneapolis, the one who got the T-shirts from that Gundersnatsman, I can't pronounce any Minnesota names, says, we have to break away, he told supporters, from relying on government to provide all the answers. Meanwhile, Kravarak has said he drew unemployment benefits during a furlough from Northwest in the early 1990s. He did not respond to several requests for an interview, nor to an email with questions about his views and whether his family has drawn on other benefits programs. This account is based on his own public announcements. So in other words, here is a success story. Unemployment insurance carried this guy, perhaps other government programs for his family, but we know at the very least unemployment insurance carried this guy and his family to a point where he could run for Congress. And now he's making $175,000 a year. Dean Lacey, a professor of political science at Dartmouth College, has identified a twist on the theme in American politics over the last generation. Support for Republican candidates who generally promise to cut government spending has increased since 1980 in states where the federal government spends more than it collects. In other words, in the states where the transfers are the greatest, support for Republicans who want to limit those transfers has increased. The greater the dependence, the greater the support for Republican candidates. Conversely, states that pay more in taxes than they receive in benefits tend to support Democratic candidates. The professor found that this pattern could not be explained by demographics or social issues. So in other words, it's not because the people are in the South and Republicans are pushing, you know, no contraception, and it's not a function that there are more or less poor people. It's fascinating. And this also coming on the heels of a report Richard Florida. I think it's in the Atlantic Wire. That Americans at this moment are more are significantly more likely to identify as conservative than liberal. Conservatives outnumber liberals by nearly 2-1. 40% identify as conservative, 36% as moderate, 21% as liberal. Now, there's no accounting for how people define this. But let's just take these numbers at face value. There's no accounting for the fact that in many of these situations, these conservative probably or moderates accept marriage equality as a moderate position, whereas maybe it was seen as a liberal position 10 years ago. But let's put that aside. They found certain associations which they rightly suggest correlation does not show causation. So you are going to have to make up your own mind about this. But these are the correlations that they found. Conservative states are considerably more religious than liberal-leaning states. Conservative states are also less educated than liberal states. States with more conservatives are less diverse in terms of immigrants or self-identified as gay and lesbian. Conservative political affiliation is strongly correlated with the percentage of a state's workforce in blue-collar occupations, highly negatively correlated with the proportion of the workforce engaged in knowledge-based professional and creative work. And states with more conservatives are considerably less affluent than those with more liberals. That doesn't mean that individuals, in fact, rich individuals tend to be more conservative. But in states that overall rich voters favor Republicans, but rich states favor Democrats. So the ongoing economic crisis only appears to deepen America's conservative drift, a trend which is most pronounced in its least well-off, least educated, most blue-collar, and most economically hard-hit states. And one other note on the general notion of creating government dependence. It is not the government that has created this dependence, because we know they have not expanded these programs to capture more people. It is the recession that has created a greater need for government dependence. This is exactly what government's supposed to do. At times where the economy goes into the shitter, as it were, the government is supposed to step in and make sure that people do not die on the streets. According to Dean Baker, in fact, the country would be facing very small deficits had it not been for the recession. Big part of the rise in the deficit of the last 4 years has been due to the expansion of unemployment benefits, food stamps, and other government programs. But he reiterates, this is a response to the recession, not a sudden urge on the part of politicians to increase the generosity and the scope of these programs. The other reason why we have deficits is because as economic activity declines, so too do tax revenues. And then you can add on to that the Bush tax cuts in and themselves. And you could add on to that the wars. He goes on to say, the second point that deserves more emphasis in the extent to which projected budget problems in the future years are the result of a broken healthcare system. If healthcare costs were in line with costs in other countries, then the country would be looking at long-term surpluses, not deficits. Again, so to the extent that Medicare and Medicaid are expensive, that is a function of healthcare being expensive, not the insurance that covers it. All right, folks, it's time for us to move into the better half of the program. We will take your phone calls. We have one on the line, as it were. Remember, you can support this program by becoming a member at majority.fm in the better half of the program. Some Occupy Wall Street victories. Monsanto on the hook in France for poisoning some farmers. Anonymous. They took down that CIA site again. Somebody, how does the CIA not have a secure website? I don't know. And a primarily Spanish speaker not allowed to run for city council in Arizona, even though her constituents are primarily Spanish speaking. Not allowed to run. Not lost in an election because her constituents found her lack of English skills to be a detriment. No, not allowed to run. Wonder if we can apply intelligence tests to some of our politicians as well. Then no one. Well, I'm sure we would have some people running. But what would the Republicans do to sort of sport a field in that instance? Ah, well. Folks, you can support this program if you're not a member, or even if you are, by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majority.fm. It makes a difference. Every little bit helps. Heck, if you go to our YouTube and watch our YouTubes, that helps. You can just go to the Support the Show section on our blog and click on that Amazon link, bookmark it, keep buying through there. Go check out our videos. Watch them every day. Just click on them. You can buy coffee at justcoffee.coop. Coffee, tea, chocolate, fair trade, organic if you want. Great stuff. 10% discount. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Win, 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 win for everybody involved. Head to majority.fm right now. Take our survey. Maybe we'll be able to get ads on the free podcast. It's embedded in today's post. Call me at 646-257-3920 or I am me now.